In today's episode of the Neil Wilkins podcast, I am joined by Alex Love. Now, Alex is a seasoned marketer, currently the VP of Marketing and Communications at Reva Solutions, a whole host of different experiences through Alex's career. Alex embodies the spirit of a lifetime learner, self-proclaimed, unquenchable, should I be able to say the word, thirst for knowledge, and certainly somebody very, very well qualified in the topic that we're going to be talking about in this conversation, which is mastering the art of failing. And spookily enough, that actually happens to be Alex's title of her own podcast as well. So we're going to go there and find out what that's all about too. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, this is an interesting one because I've got to kind of start out here. I'm a little bit skeptical. So you're going to need to kind of help me and the audience to understand if failure and failing and not getting it right first time is actually, is it permissible? Are we allowed to do that in modern business?
Yeah. And I was a skeptic too. So, you know, kind of how this podcast came about was one of my former business partners and good friends from a long time ago in a different venture in a different life had just had his first child and approached me while I was actually pregnant with my first child and said, "Hey, do you want to start a podcast?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." No better time than both of us trying to figure out parenthood while we're also, you know, diving into this podcast idea. So he pitched me on the concept of, you know, this idea of taking the lessons learned and really putting a spotlight on the concept of failure and how successful entrepreneurs and business people have, you know, maybe come into something with a grand plan or an idea that just didn't work out for whatever reason. But the value and the lessons that they learned in that journey, you know, there's so much wealth and knowledge in there. And that is really downplayed a lot, I think, in a lot of conversations. You know, you look at people, especially in the social media era, you look at the best parts of their life. You know, it's a filtered photo, it's a edited video, it's, you know, here's the all the steps I took in this linear journey to get to the top, and here's how you can do it too. But we all know that's garbage, right? You know, life's not linear. Progress is certainly not linear. You take a step forward, you take 10 steps back. But all of those lessons and those steps that you take interim, there's so much value in being able to talk about that, I think, and really putting a focus on, hey, I screwed up, I failed, I had whatever this idea is, it didn't manifest, but look at me today, right? I took those lessons, I was able to pivot and come out at the end of the day successful. And I think that's a really important message for anybody at any time of their life, is that you're never going to be 100% successful at every single thing you do. But if you take the time to learn and appreciate the lessons that you get, you are able to come out at the end of the day with something that is successful, whether or not that's kind of where you intended to go.
Feels really positive, doesn't it? It just feels that this is a great kind of mindset to have, that it is part of the journey. And we're talking lifelong journey here. I'm going to come into this whole lifelong education piece in a minute, because I think for me, I've got a real passion around that too. So I want to explore what that means to you. But just a couple of kind of steps backwards here. It's okay and it's fine to fail if you're in charge, I guess, isn't it? If you've got a startup, you've got this side hustle and it's kind of working, but it's not kind of working. Your life doesn't really depend on it. It's kind of okay to kind of mess up and then, you know, kind of reinvent yourself. But what happens actually if somebody's paying your paycheck? So you're working for an organization, maybe it's quite a lean organization. There's not a lot of slack in there or time or space to experiment or innovate. It's kind of, it's business as usual. We don't have time to make mistakes, often is, you know, the business owner or the C-suite's kind of attitude. Where does failure fit there? Because it feels like that is completely at odds with, you know, a successful business who is, you know, really striving to make shareholder value, deliver great value to all the stakeholders around it. That surely there isn't space for failing there, though, is there?
Sure. And maybe, right? I think that is highly subjective and would depend on the culture. So in some places that is okay, even in a startup environment, because startups are very risky. You are expecting to take some missteps along the way. And a lot of them do have great cultures of innovation, and you can't innovate if you don't take a risk, right? That's kind of inherent to the concept. There are absolutely, on the flip side, companies where you mess up, you're out. And I think that's just up to you as the individual to find and work for those cultures that work the best for you. And there's no right or wrong answer to that culture question. It's either something that you do really well in or you don't. And I think as you take those steps in your career, test out different environments for you, you'll be able to figure out, okay, I'm comfortable in this culture where maybe it is a little risk averse, right? And that feels safe to me because I like being a person who wants a steady paycheck for whatever reason. And that's very valid. You can go to work, make the money and go home. Or in different periods of your life, maybe you are willing to take that step because the risk is worth the reward. And so that's kind of what I found across my career in many different types of agencies, very large scale ones, very small ones, mid-sized ones, is you eventually find the culture that works for you and that speaks to your values. And you'll be willing to take that inherent risk if the company seems worth it.
I like that because that feels really authentic. It feels like you're taking like real accountability. You're not beholden to somebody else's strategy. You're not beholden to being, I guess the phrase could be, locked in over a period of time, because you know, you might be at the stage where you want to experiment, you want to push those boundaries, you want to kind of feel what it's like to, you know, you see it in the media all the time and in socials, you see all these kind of like, you know, have turned things around and done well. And you might want to kind of feel how that kind of, you know, that perception of how that actually feels within. And if you've always been then locked into an environment where, you know, everything is all about the success, you know, there is no kind of room for maneuver, and you become then beholden to that environment, it's very restricting, isn't it? You can't really adapt as a person and learn the true value that you could potentially bring being locked in like that, can you?
Yeah. And I think the other flip side of that is sometimes entrepreneurs or business owners get sucked into a singular person because of tenure and loyalty. And not every single person fits every phase of your business. And I think that's a really hard thing to swallow, especially when you're building a business and you're spending so much time with these people that, you know, they may feel like friends, families, because you're doing the late nights, you know, you're hustling, you're trying to make it work when you have a lot on the line and you're trying to succeed. But when you get to that, you know, space of, okay, we got out of the startup feel, now we're starting to scale, we need to put a little bit more parameters, a little bit more, you know, not red tape, but just processes in place to be able to make sure that our business is running, you know, efficiently now because we have more people in the mix, not everyone can successfully make that jump. And I think that's a really hard thing for an individual, right? If you start with a business from the beginning and you want to see it succeed and you get to a certain place and maybe this sort of scaling culture is not for you. And same flip side on the owner, the entrepreneur, if that's not you, you have to be able to make those tough calls to say, maybe this is no longer, you know, our values and our visions no longer align with these employees, not for right or wrong. It's just we're in a different space. And we now need to sort of find individuals who specialize in this type of business, in this type of growth, in this type of more stable environment that we want to build versus the people who are very successful in these more, you know, maverick type environments where you can kind of get in and do what you need to do. So that's kind of the flip side too, is you have to be, I think, very self-aware in the cultures that you're joining. And does this still work for me? Because we've seen that come and go. And I know myself too, right? In this time of my life, I just had my first child. She's almost 4 months old. So I'm at a mid-sized business. We are growing very, very fast, but it feels right. It's stable enough. We're mature enough, but I still get to do fun things, but I'm not worried about the paycheck coming in at the end of the day, right? But maybe today in this phase of where I am, I wouldn't want to join a startup because I'm a new mom. But at some point, you know, earlier in my career, that absolutely would have been something that I was interested in because it was just me. I was running by myself. You know, I could make it work. So having that self-awareness, I think, is very important too, to make sure that you're still in alignment with the culture as the company continues to grow as well.
What are the signs then that it's time for change, either as the business owner or as an employee? because often, you know, when we get caught up in the rat race or on that hamster wheel of, you know, every day is the same, it feels a bit like Groundhog Day sometimes, particularly in marketing for marketers, because it's a lot about processing in the moment, the tactical campaigns, the activities, the production of stuff, and particularly content right here, right now is a huge thing. So it's very easy to get almost blinded by that, isn't it? Well, what are the signs that it is time now to either take a jump, make a move, maybe embrace a little bit more risk here, and maybe even tease out some of that failure opportunity? What can people kind of watch out for?
Yeah, I think for me, so I've been at Riva for about 4 years, and I came on to build the marketing department basically from the ground up. And I was at a small consulting firm prior to that, kind of in a split role. I had left marketing for a little bit to just be a consultant after I finished business school, and really wanted to do client work, and then slowly got pulled back into the marketing side because that's, you know, kind of where my heart is. And I think that the trigger for me from leaving that last organization, which I absolutely loved the culture and I loved everyone there, was I no longer felt like I could make an impact. Because especially in the marketing role, if you don't necessarily align with the vision of the CEO or the owner of the company, it's so hard to be successful at your job. And I started to see them move in a direction where I knew that was going to be an uphill battle. And I wasn't really necessarily along for the ride. And so as soon as our values were out of alignment and I was not willing to really put in that sort of level of work because I sort of saw this failure, big, massive failure coming up, because we didn't have the right resources and sort of, you know, investment to be able to sort of support what they're trying to do. That's when I started to put feelers out and was looking for a fresh opportunity to kind of start over with a company that had a vision, was growing very rapidly, had a lot of opportunities to make impact. And it was someone who, you know, after speaking to the CEO who I'd met a decade before, sort of in passing, really felt like we had a good connection, and he supported sort of the marketing vision, which is not something marketers always get. Unfortunately, we're always asking for more money, more resources. We're always asked to, you know, prove our ROI and other things. It's a very difficult field, I think, to be in marketing, especially if you don't have CEO buy-in or C-suite buy-in. So that was really kind of what I saw the opportunity for, was that our vision and our values was out of alignment. And that was a self-reflection moment for me that while I love this role and I'm proud of the work that I've done here, I think I've kind of hit the ceiling of what I can accomplish here.
So it's interesting, isn't it? Because in some ways, somebody could look at that and think, oh, well, you failed because you didn't kind of reinvent it. You didn't kind of, you know, adapt or move with it. And surely, you know, you work for the organization. Therefore, you know, you need to embrace whatever kind of structure, challenges, objectives get sent to you. But what you're saying, I think, Alex, is, and correct me if I'm wrong here, is that actually as an individual, it's more important to stay true to where you are on your journey. And if that alignment goes slightly out of sync, it's not a failure. It's okay to separate. It's okay to part ways. Doesn't mean you lose friends as a result of it, or even long distance colleagues, but it's okay to have a different view. Because I think some people struggle with that, don't they?
No, absolutely. And I think of it as it would have been a disservice for me to stay because my heart was no longer in it. And you know, that is a really important thing for me, is that my, you know, I have to be passionate about what we're doing. And if I'm no longer, you know, feeling like I can give it my all, my creativity is starting to wane, things are starting to feel like it's very redundant, I'm not getting any, you know, inspiring ideas or better results, I'm doing the business a disservice by staying there because it's no longer my best self and my best effort. And so, you know, I did my best on my way out to make the next person successful, right? I wrote out, here's the continuation of the marketing plan for the next year, right? I, you know, gave a pretty long tenure to say, you know, I'm leaving, here's a couple of weeks to be able to transition out. I offered to help with interviews for the next person to be able to find the right candidate. Because you're right, I spent many years there. I had lots of great friends, still to this day, you know, have some great friends there. I believe in their overall vision. I think they do wonderful work, but it was just no longer a place for me. And I didn't want to be part of that hindrance for them to not be successful in the next journey because I wasn't fully sold anymore or was a part of that vision.
So if somebody's then listening to this and thinking, Alex, you've just done what I'd love to do, but I just don't have the confidence to do that right now, maybe in time, maybe I'll get to a certain point where I feel it, but actually in the meantime, I'm either going to be in denial or I'm going to procrastinate or I'm just going to hope that something changes and I'll be okay. What's your view in terms of maybe having, say, side hustles or maybe a more portfolio approach? Because I think for a lot of people, what you've done there, kind of taking the onus on yourself to say, right, I'm accountable for my world and my professional career, so I am going to move, I'm going to do something differently. There's not a lot of people, I would suggest, certainly from my experience, who are confident enough in themselves and the situation that's going to then present itself to just do it. So often people look for a migration, don't they, to evolve into the next kind of role or the next scenario. What's your view on having a more portfolio approach to this to, let's say, soften the hit?
Yeah, I think that's totally valid. And there's actually a lot of research to support that that's probably a better way to do it. I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about the founders of Warby Parker. And they were... they took their time in business school to sort of build, and it took them years to decide on the name, to decide on the brand, decide on a whole bunch of things that if they had just left their business school program, gone all in, they would have gotten it done a lot faster. But there's actually a lot of research, and I think it was Adam Grant's podcast that I was listening to, and he was talking about it, or maybe I think it was his book, actually, Originals. He was talking about that the data supports that the individuals who are a little bit less like risky and jump, you know, and at those steps and take that side hustle, put in the work behind the scenes above and beyond while keeping their day job, actually sometimes end up being a lot more successful than those people who sort of rip the Band-Aid and run into it, because this is really a passion project for them. They're dedicating all of their extra time to it while being able to continue being successful and bringing in, you know, at a more stable job during the day. So while it might take a little bit longer for some of those businesses to get off the ground, they're typically a little bit more successful than the ones that just sort of drive in it. Because again, you're dedicating your hours on the weekends, nights, other things. This is truly a passion for them. And it's a little bit more thought out because they have to be so... they have to take the time to get it right, versus those who just, you know, raise a bunch of money, jump head in, and may not be as successful because they didn't think through the plan the whole way. So I try to balance both in my life. I'm a little bit more of a rip the Band-Aid off sort of person. When I joined Riva, it was COVID, and I did a couple of virtual interviews. I'd never really met anyone in person before, but my theory and thoughts behind that were, well, it's 2020, like no one's gonna hold me accountable if I take this job sort of sight unseen and it doesn't work out, because it's COVID, right? Like I kind of got a freebie on that one. And thankfully that did work out for me. But I was in a phase where that was sort of the part of my life that made sense. I'd just gone through a separation and a divorce right before that. And while these things are very difficult, you have to put your future self, I think, in focus and say, well, this sucks for me right now. And this is very difficult for me to make this leap, change my life, put myself forward. My future self is going to be so much happier because I made this investment. So, I mean, again, it kind of comes down to your self-awareness and what you're comfortable with. There is a path no matter which direction you choose. If you want to go slow and steady, there's research to support that, you know, you will absolutely be successful that way. And there are plenty of companies and people who've just ripped off the Band-Aid and built successful businesses as well.
So for somebody, Alex, who is very happy to rip off the Band-Aid and just go for this, there was an interesting little moment there when you said about, I can probably get away with it. It was kind of my time because I'm probably not going to be judged. There was an external view here, wasn't there, playing back at you, even for you, who was, you know, really, really confident, really capable, really experienced. Was there an external, because of course for a lot of people, this whole idea of potentially failing or kind of not making the right decisions, it is often less about actually what's going on inside and much more about external perception. How are people going to view me if I get this wrong, if this was the wrong decision? Does that even affect Alex Love?
No, it definitely does. And that's what you heard me say, right? I was thinking about it from, you know, in marketing, personal branding, and your story is so important to all of us. And so when you make a change like that, and I left a very sort of stable position to join a company where, you know, I knew very little, I knew no people, I'd never stepped into their office before, and we were 100% remote. I think, you know, me looking external was saying, if this is on my resume in a year and I jumped ship after 6 months because it just didn't work out, how is that going to look to the next person who's potentially interested in hiring me? And I felt like I had a quantifiable excuse, if you will, for that, right? It was COVID, you know, I took a risk and it didn't work out, and, you know, mea culpa, it's fine. The rest of my resume sort of reads in a more traditional fashion than you would expect. But yeah, I think having that inner awareness, but also that external perception of how might this be seen, is on top of mind, especially for marketers and people who make these jumps, because you are sort of nothing without your personal brand. It is a lot of the reflection of potentially the work that you could do for a company. And so you kind of have to mind that, is, am I marketing myself well? Does this person embody their culture, and is this the type of person that they would want to bring on? Because marketers, communicators typically are some of the faces of the company. And so with every risk that you take, you just need to sort of weigh that. What is that perception? What would that look like to the next person should this not work out?
I just want to say thank you for your honesty there, because that was a little bit of a tricky, little bit of a cheeky question, really asking, you know, even Alex Love would say this, you know, so yeah, my apologies for that. It was a little bit mean, but I think it was really important just really for people to hear that, you know, when we're not alone in going through this. I think there is this perception that everybody else is going to make the right call. Everybody else is going to, you know, not face this internal turmoil that I've got going on. And for most people, that is the reality, is, you know, if they're going to do this, they want it to be seen to be a good move. As you say, the resume has got to show a real consistent progression according to the kind of external perception. But we know that isn't the case. You know, a lot of people, I'm sure that you've seen it in your experience as well, have taken either sideways or even backwards moves to then get on, because there might be some specialisms or particular areas of business that they don't have a huge amount of experience in. So they're willing to take the hit in the short term to be able to then move sideways and then move forward. Do you think we're becoming a bit more accepting of, I mean, let's not call it necessarily failure, but repositioning or pivoting as individuals? Do you think it is a more acceptable thing now to take a little bit more time, to be a bit more patient, to try and test things that otherwise, you know, would be outside of that linear career progression? Do you think it's okay to do that now?
Yeah, I think it kind of depends on like how far you are into your career. Because if you've dedicated, you know, 10, 15, 20 sort of larger milestones, and then I get an application across my desk for someone who is, you know, a very tenured, let's say, operations person, and they now want to sort of take this stab at marketing, it is a little bit harder of a pill for me to swallow, especially just looking at a document without a person, because you don't always have the context to why is this person doing this at this moment. And not everyone writes cover letters, not everyone reads cover letters, not everyone has that opportunity to give their story behind, hey, I had a really successful career in X and I did what I came to achieve. And now something feels like it's missing, right? Like there's another passion of mine or something that I've always wanted to try. And now I'm in a place where I can make that leap and I'd like to try it. I'd be very open to that if I had that context. But unfortunately, you don't have that context a lot of times. And so in the quick 5-3 seconds, whatever, you know, someone sort of takes a look at your profile or your resume, if they can't see that and make that connection, it's a no for me. Because why would I hire, you know, a very tenured operations manager to fill this social media position, right? Where I have a slew of candidates who have more expertise, less years, but more of a direct path into that role, which would be a lot easier for me as a manager and a leader to plug them directly into my team, because it takes less time for me to train them. So I think it really sort of depends. And again, I'll go back to that culture question. There are plenty of companies who are willing to take a chance on those people if they see the right skill set or they see the right personality to plug in and say, hey, you were very successful at doing this. I see that you want to make a change. We're willing to be able to take the time to train you or send you where you want to go, because we think you're a valuable candidate for this role. But there are plenty of small, mid-sized companies that just don't have that amount of time to train somebody. And so it would be inherently a risk for someone to take them on board to their team, because as much as I would love to, I don't always have the time to properly train someone. I do need someone to kind of hit the ground running and go. So yeah, I think in COVID, a lot of people started taking side hustles and a lot of millennials started taking, you know, that portfolio approach, like you said, you know, kind of cobbling together a variety of different projects that's able to pay their bills versus, you know, taking a full-time job because it gives them more flexibility. And some of that, I think side hustle, gig economy maybe is slowing down a little bit. But as you start to see some of these big tech companies start the series of layoffs again, I do think that that probably will come back. And so, yeah, I really think there's no perfect solution for anybody. You really just have to do that inward look and say, what's the best approach for me? How do I get to where I want to go? Is this a leap that I want to take, you know, to try to find a company who will take me without this skill set? Or do I want to build up a side portfolio to make the case, to make it a little bit easier to say, hey, maybe this is not my day job, but this is certainly my night job. And here's why you should bring me on.
Mm. So do you think then that it kind of, it's a little bit of a balance. I guess it depends on the recruiter and it depends on the culture of the organization you then apply to. But if you get it really badly wrong, let's just say you make a judgment that you're leaving the company because of all of Alex's advice that, you know, I'm no longer aligned with them, et cetera, et cetera. And then you move to this organization and you think, yeah, it's going to be a great fit. Let's just say it's a month in and you and they just know this is the wrong deal. You know, it just goes tragically wrong. I mean, that's about as bad as it can get, isn't it, really? I mean, it's like almost instant that you know. Is that, do you think, from a your typical kind of, let's stay within the marketing sphere here, is that your typical kind of marketing recruiter's nightmare, really, that they would look at this and think, oh dear, that's really not good. Okay, move on to the next person. Or do you feel that on balance, and of course there is no perfect here, but on balance, a recruiter would look at that and think, well, good for you. That it didn't work out, but actually I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt. As long as I don't see this in every role that you do, so you literally, you've got six or seven different roles and you stayed literally weeks within each one and something is not quite right. But do you think, is there a number of times that you can kind of fail or get it wrong or have bad judgment before it starts to become an issue? I'm trying to find this kind of balance for how far people can push it before it's actually a real problem.
Yeah, I think it's all about patterns. If you look at somebody's history and you see time over time, they're taking a role and they're only there for a couple of months and they're not able to hit a significant milestone. And that seems to be prevalent in every single role that they're taking. That would be the red flag to me, is that, you know, this person has never managed to stay in a role. So they're either not very good at their job and they, you know, the company keeps finding ways to either lay them off or fire them. Or they're someone who's very itchy and maybe hasn't figured out what's important to them yet and they're maybe in the wrong sector or in the wrong role. If I saw that on someone's resume from like either the last current role that they're at or, you know, again, it kind of depends on sort of the longevity of their career. If it happens every once in a while and you are able to, you know, articulate that, I think being open and honest is probably the best thing. And that's how I run my teams, is very open, transparent teams. And so I'm looking for individuals who will fit in sort of that kind of culture. So if someone came to me and they had a resume that I was interested in, but maybe I had a question about, you know, why are you already on the market, right? You haven't been in this role very long. If they upfront said, hey, this is, you know, wasn't the role that I was expecting, or I was sort of sold something differently. And then when I got into the organization, it didn't end up working out and I'm looking for a better fit. That to me is actually a green flag, because that would indicate that they're very self-aware, that they understand what they're looking for in the environments that they're going to be successful in. And the top skill for me really, truly, generally is team cohesion. You can train people on almost anything. There is a baseline of things you need to accomplish depending on what level you're coming into the organization. But yeah, if someone was open and honest and say, hey, I tried it out, it didn't work for me, it's not a good culture fit, I think that would be a positive for me.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I think, you know, everybody listening to this, just kind of reflect, I guess, kind of where you are. And you know, where you are in that balance, because I think certainly I would back up that Alex, you know, sort of as a recruiter, team creator, very experienced marketer here, is talking a reality that I can certainly say I've seen reflected, you know, over many, many years. So it's great to hear it from you, Alex, that that is kind of how you're doing it literally in practice right here, right now. So I think that can be really encouraging for people who might be just on that precipice of, you know, shall I do it now? Shall I go? Not really sure. It's going to feel like a failure if people then judge me, etc. It's okay. Unless this becomes a pattern and you can afford to do it maybe once or twice, it's not an issue at all. If they're kind of doing this and maybe they make that jump and then they realize actually in the next company that they've just moved into, that actually the skill sets they thought they had, they don't actually have, and that actually they were almost either kidding themselves or they were in a very strange previous environment that kind of made them think that they were skilled and experienced and stuff, but actually they know nothing. So they've moved into this new role. I know your view of the world is that, you know, probably from the minute we were born, we were meant to be consuming education and information and becoming ever more present and wise and stuff. Is that the big answer to kind of getting over this? And, you know, coming back to the title of, you know, mastering the art of failing, can we all get over pretty much any hurdle professionally like this by learning?
Any hurdle? I don't know. There are probably some things that maybe you aren't able to come back from, but like we're talking Herculean things. But I would say generally, yes. You know, we live in the age of the internet where almost everything is on YouTube or you can Google it, right? So if you are a self-starter and you got hired for a role and you realize, oh, hey, maybe my skill set's not as strong as I thought it could be. There are unlimited resources that are typically free that anyone could get in, dig in, self-educate on, and try to learn a little bit more on the side. Depending on the team that you're joining too, you probably have colleagues who have experience or understand too. So if you're comfortable claiming I'm the newbie, help me out. I think a lot of people are generally willing to give you their time and help them navigate a new company, a new culture, which is very difficult, and point them in the direction of some of the skills and other things that they may be able to help train people on. But yeah, I mean, granted, there are certain things, but we're talking very, very large, like monumental things. But I think for in the most part, almost anything that happens in your life, you are able to pick yourself back up, pivot, learn from it, and find and correct your path forward.
Which is such a point of encouragement, I think. You know, as soon as we start using this word failure, it kind of almost feels it's like a life sentence. It's like, that's it. I failed. I am a failure. And it kind of almost puts that self kind of proclaimed label on somebody, doesn't it? Either yourself or onto somebody else. And I think for lots of people, it's actually quite hard to get over it. But what we're saying is that nothing is as bad as you think. Most of it is a perception from others that actually you're guessing they're perceiving you as, and they probably aren't. You can make multiple failures and you can still bounce back, and it really doesn't, from a recruiter's perspective, have that much impact unless it's a real pattern. And you can actually learn your way out of most situations unless they're so fundamentally against who you are as a human being, and then you probably got to have a rethink about what you're doing anyway, completely fundamentally. So it doesn't feel like any of this really is a showstopper at all. Have you, in on your podcast, have you actually found any examples, or in your professional career, any examples of where people literally haven't come back and where failure has been absolute failure?
Nope, not a single one. No, all the conversations that we have all been very positive. And I think the further you are away from some of those incidents, the easier it is for you as a person to look back and say, yeah, I can laugh about this now, or maybe I can talk a little bit more about it because I now understand what's on the other side of this cliff for me. And it is something successful. But we've had people from all different industries and walks of life come on. I think the craziest sort of pivot story was we had an entrepreneur come on who was trying to be a musician, you know, got really close to being a traveling musician on Warped Tour and some of these big bands, and had you know, friends in some of these bands that we've heard that are still on the radio, that had made it and that his band didn't. And now he pivots and has a very successful company talking about commerce and the future of commerce. So huge pivot, right? Going from, I'm going to, you know, be a band mate, a successful, famous musician, and then come out on the other end and say, actually, you know, I talk about commerce and the future trends in commerce. So yeah, at any point in your life, you can forecast, this is what I want to do. Take those steps to get there. And it's okay to realize, hey, maybe I'm not actually very good at this, or maybe this isn't as, you know, maybe this isn't sort of a vision for me. We all had those ideas of what we wanted to be when we were growing up. And I think you never stop growing up and you never stop having new ideas of how you can reinvent yourself. So just being really core to yourself, I think, and checking in that even if you have one goal, it's okay for those goals to change if as you evolve as a person and you learn sort of what you're passionate about, what your situation in life sort of forecasts. It's okay to evolve with that as long as you're keeping in touch with yourself and how that is. As you said, I think, you know, people always have this external perspective that everyone's staring at me, they're going to judge me, they're going to label me this and that. And I think most people pay a lot less attention to other people than we think they do in our head. But you know your story and sort of your path the best, and you're always your harshest critic. So getting okay with yourself will sort of get you to that place where you can exude the confidence, or maybe false confidence, right, to sort of make those shifts and sort of fake it until you make it, until you get to a place where you sort of see, okay, maybe this is okay, maybe I've made a good step.
There was one sort of little example that actually my wife with our kids used to sort of use, which was, you know, if they were ever feeling self-conscious or that, oh, you know, as you say that, you know, the world is looking at me. She always used to say, right, can you remember what person X was wearing? And it's like, well, no. Well, exactly. So they're not looking at you either, are they? And it's like, oh, and you could just see that kind of that moment of, you know, self-reflection is like, oh yeah, everybody's in their own little bubble, aren't they? You know, it's kind of, that's kind of the reality of it, even though we think all eyes are on us. And often, as you say, you know, that is the almost the this definition of the perception of failure. I mean, one of the things that has come through really loud and clear, I think, and again, correct me if I'm not right here, is you're really, really advocating self-awareness, that real kind of time, taking time out to just look inward, reflect, be with yourself, to just really sit comfortably with who you are, what your preferences are, what you're enjoying doing, where you see the future going, and really get a real sense of an honest perception rather than just getting swept along. Is that a bit of a theme really behind this whole mastering the art of failing?
Yeah, absolutely. At the end of every year, I sort of take a pause and I sort of write down like how I'm feeling, what's important to me. Usually at the beginning of the year, I'll set some goals, both personally and professionally, check in on those to see how I did. And I always think about, you know, things in your life change and some of these goals that you wrote down in January, February may no longer be valid, and that's okay. You know, last year, I'm a big power lifter on the side. At the beginning of last year, I wrote down all of these wonderful personal goals that I was going to chase on the powerlifting side, and then I got pregnant. So it's okay that I did not hit those, right? Because my life took a different path. And that's sort of where I needed to focus my energy on, was getting our family ready to expand and to welcome our daughter. So taking that time to write it down or journal it, there's a million different things that you can sort of do, whatever works for you. If you're into vision boards, go for it. If you like journal prompts or meditation, whatever it is, try it out, figure out what works for you. But yeah, taking a time to just sort of figure out, what are my core values? What's important to me? How do I use those to guide the next steps in my life? Is something that I do quite regularly. And anytime that I kind of get in this, as you said, the swirl, right? Like I get really caught up into something, or I'm starting to feel the burnout creep in and it's no longer in alignment. One of the books that I always go back to on my shelf and reread every single time I kind of hit one of these critical points in my life is The Stranger by Camus. So big fan in terms of like the existential perception of like life is meaningless until you give it meaning. And so every time I read that book and the critical steps in my life and sort of think back and I'm like, wow, take a pause. Like, this is all nonsense, right? I kind of got myself into this place. I need to sit back, level up, think about the situation from an external perspective and realize that it's not that big of a deal. I can figure this out. I've survived every single thing that's been thrown my way so far and will continue to survive everything that's being thrown my way. So I use that as sort of a reference point to reconnect and say, I've given this too much time and attention. This is out of alignment with how I am as a person, and I need to figure out what the right step is to get myself back in alignment and create that purpose and drive my life in the direction that it needs to go.
So are you saying then that ultimately that self-awareness comes from being a little bit more patient as everybody, you know, sort of, you know, rushes around this world, is like, you can slow down, guys. You can take a little bit more time. You can reflect. You don't have to be doing it this year. As Alex was saying, you know, priorities change. It is about just the sensibility of time, isn't it? It's not about, oh, I've got to run to my next meeting. Oh, I've got to, you know, be earning this amount by this point in my career. And it's like, hold on. The universe has got a big plan. It's a way bigger plan than you could ever plot out. So just, it's almost trust, isn't it? This kind of trusting that it's going to be okay. I mean, we haven't come up with a single reason why somebody cannot make a job change right now. We've come up with no single reason why it's a bad thing to fail once or twice. There isn't a problem here, is it? It's just self-coaching ourselves to just slow down, take a time, pause and reflect, and you're going to be okay.
Yeah. And one of the reasons I was so drawn to sort of this concept of the podcast was because I very much shied away from that earlier in my life. And so I was that person in my 20s that was chasing those goals by certain ages, because those are the perceptions that society puts on you. You know, I have to make, you know, $100,000 by 30. I have to get married and have kids by 25. And I was sort of, you know, checking along these boxes and making these life choices that was getting me to those places where I was achieving those things, but at what cost, right? You know, I got married at 26 and I got divorced at 30. And so now I'm remarried, found, you know, the person, my husband now, who is my person, who is my right partner in life, later in life, in my 30s, because I had a lot more of connection and was, I kind of went through it, right? And was like, well, I know exactly what I don't want, right? And I've been through the trials and tribulations, and now I know who I am as a person, as a more grounded person. Here's the complement that I need in my life, and was able to find that person. And now, you know, nothing about my life is sort of the same that it was 10 years ago. And that's a positive thing. And a lot of that was due to failures, because I rushed through things, or I just, you know, married the person I was dating in my 20s because that was accepted. That was expected, right? You move in, you get married, you have kids, you do these things. This is just the next step. And I think a lot of people sort of let those expectations from society get to them and don't always make the right choices for themselves because they're worried about, you know, what's the perception of this. But throughout, you know, all of my personal and professional failures, have been very open about those conversations, because you never know who's in that situation, who could benefit from hearing that from someone else who came, who did the hard thing and came out on the other side and said, I screwed up and I took the chance to write it and figure out the better part for my life. And when I was going through my separation in 2019, I like had a series kind of, you know, here's me backing up the boxes, like we're leaving, me and my dog are going, and wrote a very sort of thoughtful post about, you know, this was really hard. This is going to be very hard, moving out, sort of restarting my life at 30. And I had many people that I had no idea were going through similar situations that had been in relationships that just got comfortable, but were so scared to sort of take that step out of their comfort zone and say, like, this is not the right person for me. And I know this, but I'm petrified to, you know, rip my life apart and start over, even though I know that's the right thing to do. So you never know who's sort of watching you when you have these moments of honesty with people to say, I did it. It sucked. But on the other end, it's much, much better. And I would much rather go through those temporary moments of discomfort to be able to find and end up in the right place for you in the future.
And I think that has to resonate with every single one of us, me included. It just feels totally the right way to do it. If somebody's listening to this and they've said, wow, everything that Alex is saying totally resonates, I need to get this podcast, how can they connect with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So LinkedIn is the best way to get a hold of me. So Alex S. or Alex Stevens Love on LinkedIn. But my podcast is Mastering the Art of Failing. And we are live on all different podcast platforms. So our website is failingpod.com.
Wonderful. I'll put all of those links into the show notes so that everybody can literally click away to their heart's content. Alex, this has been a really great conversation. As with often with these kinds of subjects, I don't really know where the conversation is going to go, but I always have hope. I always have, you know, trust that it's going to flow. It's going to go somewhere useful. And I've just picked up so many little tips, and I'm going to slow down today for the rest of my day today. I'm going to slow down because, yeah, it's the right thing to do. So, Alex Love, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a great conversation.